Okay, let's explore a little bit the complex sugya of gerkatan, which is a topic which is very relevant. It comes up in halachic practice a lot and has many very significant issues that need to be addressed. And also, as far as lamdas is concerned, this is a very significant lamdas and draws on the entire structure of gerus that we've seen so far. And the sugya is primarily here, not as much in Yevamos, where we've been working off of as our home base, but is in Maseches Ksubis, on Daf Yud Aleph. And there we learn a number of interesting things. Just reading the words of the Gemara, so we see a number of significant points, which we'll have to jump off from. So first of all, if you have a ger katan, you have a convert, a prospective convert, who is a minor, matbilin oso al das bezdin. So we bring him to tevila, we bring him through this process of gerus, through the das of bezdin. And the Gemara, in these few lines, the Gemara teaches us a number of important building blocks here. What are they? So first of all, that it is the Das of Bezdin that is functioning here. How does that work? Right? How can somebody else's Das replace the Das of the primary player, who, as a katan, with all due respect to all the fine katanim I know, does not have Das in a halachic sense? So because of his lack of ability to express Das, it is the Bezdin that does it on his behalf. So how does that work? What's the principle, says the Gemara? Zochin. Right? That we have this idea of zuchus, that one can acquire something on behalf of someone else. One can be mizake, we'll say now just very vaguely, something to another on their behalf. So the Gemara raises the question that, how do we know that this is a schus? And it could be that he's not going to see it as a schus. And the Gemara says, especially, we find that with somebody who has experienced the avodah zarah, or a life of freedom from the demands of Torah, so they may find that to be the more desirable life. And then the Gemara distinguishes, well, that might be true about an adult who has had time to taste that lifestyle, he may indeed find that that's more desirable. But dealing with a katan here, we have the right to assume that the Torah life is going to be a schus for him. And then the Gemara also introduces this idea that because he is still yet unformed, he's still a katan, so then when he becomes an adult, it's possible for him to reject this whole conversion, is to say, it's not for him. But what also emerges from the Gemara is that this is essentially a pretty low-key process, maybe a passive process, and that if he just exists sometime as an adult, presumably with the knowledge of his options here, so then that will constitute and accept. Yes, sir, Tyler.
Simple question I'm going to ask anyway.
Nothing simple here, so you're already, but yeah, okay, try it.
What's the main option between a katan and an adult non-Jew? Just the taste of Avodah Zarah, maybe? So we assume he wants that?
On that point, I mean, the nafkah minas we'll see might be quite extensive, but just as far as that one line in the Gemara wants to know, how are we so confident that this is a schus for him? That the idea of schia is premised on the notion that I can do something without your knowledge if it helps you. Right? Clearly, I can't deficit you against your will, like without your knowledge. That's called stealing. Right? So I can't, in general, make decisions for you without your consent. So the only basis that we have to allow me to act on your behalf is if we can be confident that it helps you, that it's something that you would want. Should probably be careful in phrasing that, because we'll see that that's going to be a discussion. How are we translating it? Those are two different things, something that helps you and something that you would want. So, or they could be two different things. So here, what's interesting and what's noteworthy is that the Gemara is defining it the second, not as the first. The Gemara seems to be defining it based on what you would want rather than what is good for you. So clearly, from our philosophy, we believe that a Torah life is more value than a, you know, to put it mildly, has infinitely more value than a idolatrous life. But from the perspective of the idolater, so he has enjoyed that liberty, so we can't assume that, oh, if we'll just convert him without his consent, well, we're at least doing something that's the chus for him. But the Gemara says, okay, fine, that's true about an adult who has had some exposure to this. But a katan who hasn't, so then we still have the ability to assume that it's his chus. Now, it's very interesting because we'll see this is going to have huge ramifications la halacha, defining what we mean by his chus. Very, very important point. And it sounds like from the Gemara that it's defined based on what he would want. That he would want that lifestyle, so then we can call it a chus. Moshe Dechter? Your voice is choppy. I don't know if that's me or...
Better?
Try it again. Yeah, start now.
Okay, so I had a question about how do we define a valid candidate? Meaning, does the child wants to become a Jew? Is a parent Jewish, but the mother wasn't, so the father wants to convert the kid. Like, does the kid necessarily want to become Jewish, and that's why we're converting him? Or it could even be like a parent saying, I want the child, or maybe both.
You hit on all the good questions. These are all issues we're going to have to get to, because every possibility you just mentioned is a possible scenario, and they probably are distinct from each other, so we'll have to see that also.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I think it's likely we'll probably just get the issues on the table, and we'll probably have to leave the next day or two to finalize them. But every point you just raised is a significant category that needs its own attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So far, just we have from the Gemara this idea of being a chus apparently being defined by just what the individual would want, and opening up this possibility that it might be canceled later. Also, I should be careful how I use English, because we'll see the lumdus of that is also going to be subject to discussion. But on the surface, that's a reasonable way to translate it, that it could be canceled later. Now, if you saw Tosis over there, assume you saw that. So Tosis gets involved in some of the complexities of this, as do a lot of the Rishonim. So we gave you a list of some of the Rishonim over here, the Ritva, the Shidim Mekubetzis, the Rush. Tosis, they all try to figure out exactly what is happening here. Because if the active element is Zchus, is Zachin, so how does Zachin work? Tosis initially works off the assumption that Zachin is going to be difficult here. First of all, we're dealing with a katan, we're dealing with a non-Jew, and it's not clear that Zachiyah works for a non-Jew. And Zachiyah should essentially only be effective on a level midrabbanan for this combination of factors. And that is the first perspective that Tosfos takes, that essentially we're dealing here with a Geiris Rabbanan, and that this child is not Jewish on a level in the HaTorah until such time as he becomes an adult, and then he's able to finish off the process. But as a katan, he's only a Jew midrabbanan. So maybe this is another version of being a partial Jew, right? So again, for my elementary school rabbi, you've seen, just to recap, how many different ways can you be half a Jew? So not because of one parent versus two, but you could be half a Jew because you have Shem Yisrael without Kaddish Yisrael, because you have part of you was created in a Jewish mother and part of you wasn't. And here you could be a Jew with the Rabbanon. and not yes, not necessarily a Jew minhag Torah. So then Tosfos gets into some of that. Well, he's going to say that, but what he does is seemingly effective on a level of minhag Torah. How's that going to be? So Tosfos invokes the whole idea of yesh koach lakar davar minhag Torah, that the rabbis have the authority sometimes to override Torah law, and we conclude that that's only true when it's passive, when it's the Sheva Al-Tasa, but maybe this is all according to the opinion that it's Kumbase. And then ultimately, Tosis seems to conclude that actually it is possible that this is effective Minhag Torah, that when we're dealing with a Schus that is a little complicated, that it's a Schus in the final tally, but there is a Tzad Chov, there is some loss involved, so then that's the Rabbanan, but a schus, that's an absolute schus, that's a schus gomer. And Tosis also invokes that you would have, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where the Gemara seems to talk about, before coming to this conclusion, Tosis invokes the fact that the Gemara seems to make reference to a Din Min HaTorah that is talking specifically about a child convert, so apparently you have such a thing, as a ger katan min haTorah, and Tosfos suggests that that is talking about a mubarish neskara, our previous sugya, that when you have a pregnant woman who converts, so then her child is going to be both a ger and a katan, and a ger katan min haTorah. So that itself is taking on different positions in terms of what we saw last week about how exactly the effectiveness of a pregnant woman converting on behalf of the fetus works. Rabbi Akiva Eiger asks over here that if we conclude that Uber lav yarech imo, that the Uber is not considered to be a limb of his mother, is distinct, and therefore what's happening later is going to be a mila of Geirus, so then how is he any different than any other child convert? So some suggest, to go back to this partial Jew point, that this is also an expression of the split that we saw also last week, that when we talked about the whole question of the view of the Ramban, which leads one to the conclusion that the Mila is a Mila of Geirus, and yet the baby is still considered related to his mother and the like, and we mentioned the approach of Garnat and others, that there is Shame Yisrael that comes from the mother and just Kedushas Yisrael, which is added with the Mila. So to here, it could be that he is considered to be fully Jewish or Daraisa Jewish because of being born from a Jewish mother, but still needs to complete the conversion for other purposes. Okay, so with that somewhat complex package, everyone following so far? So we'll go back and forth. It's a little bit of a complicated point. But we see within Tosfos, and you'll see within other Rishonim also, that there is a machlokes, whether this ger is a ger d'oraisa or ger d'rabbana. Is this principle of Zochin making him only into a rabbinically recognized ger, or is he a full ger min haTorah? So Rabbi Warman, Zechana Levrach, in the Sefer Sheres Yosef in Chelik Gimel, has an essay about Gerus overall, where he starts from this point, and he connects this to the Chakir that we also talked about last week. What exactly is Beis Din doing? Is Beis Din just there to endorse what the Ger is doing? The Ger is the one converting himself, and Beis Din has to watch it? Or is Beis Din effecting the Geirus? Is Beis Din making the Geirus happen? If Beis Din is making the Geirus happen, so then it could be a Geirus Daraisa. They're in control of the whole process. So they are, the presence of their Das is enough to make it no less than any other Geirus. But if the idea is that the convert himself is performing the Geirus in front of the Beis Din, then we have to worry that he doesn't have his own das. And the das is being supplied through Zochin. Maybe that's only a process midrabanan, and that may bring us to that conclusion. So essentially, he connects it to this whole issue of the question of what bezdin accomplishes, and he goes on to discuss that point extensively. There is also a lack of clarity here as far as the bracha is concerned. So when it comes to tefillah, here our focus is on the tefillah. So we saw that the Gemara in Sachem says that when an adult converts, so the bracha of the tefillah is recited by the ger afterwards. What about here? So presumably he's not going to be able to make his own bracha. He doesn't have a das in the process. So is Beis Din making a bracha beforehand? Is Beis Din making a bracha afterwards? Beis Din not making a bracha at all? So this was a machlokas through spanning the Rishonim and the Achronim. The 3DH assumes that you don't have a bracha here in these circumstances, but the Raivis and the Bali and Nefesh wrote that there was a bracha performed by Beis Din, and the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shechter, relates that, he says there, that Rav Soloveitchik was only involved in one Beis Din for a Geiris, and it was a Ger Katan, and he had a suffix about this, about what exactly would be the appropriate bracha. In the Tshuvas of the Lutzker Rav, the author of Moznayim LaTorah, is a Sefer called Moznayim LaMishpat, where he talks about the halachic issues, and it's in Chaf and Chaf Aleph. So he talks about this, about the question of a bracha on the tefillah. He gets involved also that the Gemara had discussed, if you recall, the Gemara in Shabbos had talked about the bracha on the milah, and whether there's one bracha or two is a question in Girsa and a question in Rishonim, had a paskin. Shulchan Aruch says two brachas, the bracha before and a bracha afterwards. So he gets involved in that whole discussion of what exactly a bracha on Geiris would represent, what exactly is a mitzvah involved in Geiris, and everything seems to involve everything else in these very beautiful sugyas. So this goes back to day one. So there he discusses some interesting perspectives on the bracha here, and about the concern of whether if you have the Beis Din making the bracha, should we be concerned that maybe he will grow up and he will decide to cancel it? And is that a concern of a bracha l'mafreya, a bracha l'vatala l'mafreya, a retroactive bracha l'vatala once we see that it doesn't actually result in a enduring geiris? And he is inclined to say bracha does make sense here, and he talks about it both from the perspective of a bracha being a bracha sheva, being a bracha not necessarily in the mitzvah of geiris as much as a bracha of hodah on the concept of geiris, but also even to the extent that it is a bracha mitzvah. So he talks about the idea that what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to provide this process for the one who wants to enter into the Shechina. It's not contingent on what happens later. So the nature of the mitzvah is to provide this process, and therefore the bracha is legitimate regardless of what happens later. And he quotes a Chassam Sofer to that effect, that there is a tshuva of the Rashba, that the Rashba is one of the major sources in the question of what mitzvos have brachos and what mitzvos don't. So what it sounds like the Rashba expresses as a principle is that any mitzvah that requires the participation of somebody else, you don't make a bracha, because maybe they'll leave you hanging. So you don't make a bracha on tzedaka, for example, because maybe the individual you're trying to provide for won't accept the tzedaka. But in the context of the Berachas Erusin, that we have a bracha before marriage, even though maybe the kallah will say no, it sounds a little awkward to go that far and be ready to say no, but I guess stranger things have happened. So there, he says, based on the Chassam Sofer, that the mitzvah is to try to effect Erusin and to go through that whole process. The bracha is not subject to not working. If you've gotten that far, that's what you're doing, so then the bracha is inherently valid. It says, so too here, by the tefillah of this ger katan, the bracha is inherently valid, even if later on there should be a change, or even if you're dealing with an adult. Let's say, we talked about the bracha on the mila. Let's say you make a bracha on the mila of adult ger, and then he decides to not convert. So would you say that that's a bracha levatala? Let's say he chickens out in between the two. So once again, he says, no, so that's the nature of this whole process here. It's a very interesting perspective. Tyler?
We're saying based in when make a, I mean, we're not saying for sure, but according to those who say you make a bracha, it would be based in making the bracha.
Yeah, the cotton's not tracked to the bracha yet, so it would be based in making the bracha in this case.
And what if it's a parent and a child? Does the parent need the bracha for the child?
So the role of the parent is huge. It's a huge discussion. We'll probably get to that a little bit later. But the bracha part is presumably for the bezin, either way. Although the involvement of the parent may make a huge difference in this whole discussion, and we'll have to at least put that on the table. We'll see how far we get with it. Okay. So one big question here is: so we spoke also last week about Kabbalah Hamitzvos as crucial to the Gerus process. So what happens to the Kabbalah Hamitzvos here? Cotton is not in a position to be Makabel Mitzvos. So how could you have a Geirus without Kabbalah Mitzvos? So how do you address that? So here there are a number of perspectives. The Shita Mekubetzes here in Ksubas talks about it. And the Shita Mekubetzes says that since it's not Shaykh to have Kabbalah Mitzvos, so you don't need it. Which was a topic we touched upon last week also. And how exactly do you see Kabbalah and Mitzvot in this picture? Do you see it as a affirmative necessity? Or do you see the lack of Kabbalah and Mitzvot as a problem? Even all working within the assumption that it's Ma'akev, but what does it mean it's Ma'akev? So here, the idea that it's not Ma'akev if it's not possible, so that's a very interesting idea that this Shita Mekubetzes is advancing. And if you saw, I can put on the list that the Dagom Ravava, the Nedi Behuda, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, Dagom Ravava works off a point like that when he says that when the Shulchan Aruch says that Tvila in front of a Bezdin may not be Ma'akev in the end, he says that by an adult. Because an adult, so the Iker Geirus is the Kabbalah Samitzvos, so the Tvila wouldn't necessarily have to Likuva be in front of a Bezdin. But when you're dealing with a cotton, so there's no Kabbalah Samitzvah, so the whole Geirus is happening through the Tevila. So there, it's Ma'akev, you for sure have to have the Beis Din present at the Tevila. Tyler, so you had a question?
Yeah, I thought we concluded that by a Shota, like somebody who's no dust, he's not going to convert ever. We can't accept somebody like that. That's how we said.
We actually didn't talk about that at all. We talked a little bit about Summa. We mentioned that there was a whole machlokas about that. But the topic of somebody who's halachically without das, like a shot or a cotton, is a, I mean, you may have seen it in one of the makaros about it. I don't think we actually spoke about it in the show, though. So I do want to come back to that in terms of how that plays out here. So that we will get to, but I don't think we spoke about it so far.
So I was going to say that the Shita Mekubetzes might make a chiluk between those two people. A cotton will be
correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that distinction is important. It sounds like that from the Rambam, so we'll get to that. Okay, so this idea that the Dagom Ravava is accepting from the Shita Mekubetzes and others, so it's interesting, and it's a little bit surprising as far as what we saw about Kabbalah Mitzvot last week. This idea that it's possible to have a Geirus without it if the Kabbalah Mitzvos is impossible. And Rabbi Willig has a Sefer, Rabbi Willig and Sefer Amurachai has an important piece on Ger Katan, where he talks about many of the practicalities in the Lumdus of this issue, very kedai to see inside, the Amurachai on Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. And there, the way he understands this, says that presumably, it's comparable to a korban, That's the same way the Gemara says in Krisus that Geirus should require a Karban, but Bizman Hazeh, when there are no Karbanos, so then Geirus works without a Karban, and as we discussed a few times, it has to, because of that idea of Ladara Seichem, that Geirus has to always be possible, so if it's otherwise apparently impossible, it must be that whatever detail is impossible is not crucial. So he assumes that that's what's happening here also, that if you have a katan who cannot be makabel mitzvah, so therefore this works for him also. It's an expanded idea of ledara seichem, because what the Gemara is talking about, that in every generation, geirus is theoretically possible. It could have maybe excluded certain individuals, or at least certain individuals at certain phases of their life. We discussed some time ago that Rav Asher Weiss was inclined, at least, to take the position that somebody who it's a sakana for him to have a mila, so the Achiezer and others said there can't be any geirus for such a person if they can't have a mila, and Rav Asher Weiss was inclined to say that there could be, because he thought this idea of Ladara Seichem addressed on an individual level also, that we can't say for any individual who's otherwise worthy that geirus is impossible. So here, this is kind of taking it the next step further, that even the katan has only temporarily got this obstacle, still geirus has to be possible now, just like the karban, and therefore it's possible without kabbalah and mitzvahs. But, in Rabbi Willig's formulation, he says that it still is different than the karban. Because if you had a ger who converts today, so he doesn't bring a karban, and then next month the Beis HaMikdash starts up again and karbanos are possible, and let's say he doesn't bring a karban, so he's assuming that the geirus is still valid. That, in other words, the geirus is not contingent on the idea that if karbanos later become possible, that you will do that. But here he says it's different, that the geirus is contingent on the assumption that when he grows up, he will be makabel mitzvahs, because that was a part of what we knew from the beginning. Now, when it comes to the karban, so a person converts today, we hope meher yibana hamikdash, but we know it could be that he'll live 120 years and there'll be no possibility for a karban. So the geirus is good without it. And then we're pleasantly surprised with the Beit HaMikdash, it's still good even without it. But when it comes to the katan, so we know that part of the process is, God willing, he should live a full life, so then he'll become an adult, and then there'll be the opportunity to be makabel mitzvos. So then it means the kabbalas mitzvos is not ma'akev right now when it's not possible, but it does have to happen when it is possible. And that's how he understands the mechanics of him refusing or accepting once he becomes a bar mitzvah. So that is all based on that premise here, that what happens when he becomes a bar mitzvah? Basically, it's a delayed kabbalah mitzvah. That the kabbalah mitzvah has to happen, but it doesn't have to happen yet. It can happen when he becomes an adult. Then that provokes the whole question, okay, well, how come then he doesn't need a bezdin? That when an adult converts, he needs a bezdin for kabbalas hamitzvos. If the katan has the delayed kabbalas hamitzvos, how come that doesn't have to be in front of the bezdin? So that, as a Willig notes, it gets into the whole sugya, you can get into the lumdus here, that we talked about, what does b'fnei bezdin mean? Does b'fnei bezdin mean that they have to actually witness something? Or is it enough that they just know about it because of their involvement in other parts? So the whole lumdus of what is b'fnei bezdin is going to play a role in that discussion as well. But you could understand it differently. Mr. Radei shows a tshuva about this. That maybe you could say that it's a delayed kabbalah mitzvos. Or it could be that, no, he doesn't really need Kabbalah or mitzvahs at all if he converts to Zakat. But the Gemara was premised on the assumption that this is a tzchus for him. And the way the Gemara formulates it, the definition of a tzchus seems to be subject to his decision. Is he happy or not? So therefore, once he's old enough to express his opinion, so maybe that goes back and defines what was going on here. Was it a tzchus or not? So if he, at the age 13, he says, you know what, I'm not interested in this. I find cheeseburgers too appealing. So then, okay, so we now see that it wasn't a tzchus for him, and that's why it doesn't work. And then the whole thing maybe retroactively gets canceled. So the whole lumdus of how this is playing out may hinge on that kind of question, which also presumably is affected by the question of whether it was the Geirus D'Oraisa or the Rabbanan to begin with, which is discussed in an essay. We'll probably have to expand more on this next time by Rav Shlomo Dachovsky, Shlita, the Dayan in Eretz Yisrael, in his sefer Leif Shemei L'Shlomo, where he considers that issue also. So in the interest of time, I think I'll just lay out some of the other crucial issues, which each will require greater analysis, so we'll do that more on Wednesday, because tomorrow we will have Rabbi Reese visiting with us, and he'll call the agenda. But mentioning these issues now will also help you to be familiar with what some of the practicalities are, and we can discuss them with Rabbi Reese as well. So a few other issues that are relevant here is, first of all, as Rabbi Willig discusses in his Sefer, so it's not clear from the Rambam that the Rambam does have this idea of higdilu yucholim limchos, exactly the way it sounds like, that it's necessarily possible to undo the geiris through refusing it. And what exactly the lumdus of that is interesting. And it could be that as far as the schus that the Gemara is talking about, it's that the bezdin is mezakehim in the estim hageiris, not that the bezdin is mezakehim for his das or for any kind of a side detail, but that the whole process of geiris is happening through the tchus of the bezdin. And then if he doesn't want to be mekabel mitzvahs, he doesn't end up undoing it, he ends up somewhere in the middle, which is an interesting view. It's also an important practical question, and seems to be a machlokus among the poskim, is how much can a bezdin do this? So Gemara sounds like he's doing it without the will of the katan, because the katan doesn't have das. What if the katan is old enough to express that he doesn't want to do it? Can a bezdin convert a child against his expressed desires? So that's an important practical question to figure out. That's probably subject to a machlokes. And another very big, very important practical question is, does chus have an objective definition here? So until now we've seen it contingent to some degree on just what the individual wants or doesn't want. But is there some kind of inherent definition of schus? This is a hugely, hugely practical question. Because what if you were to have a katan who's going to convert into a non-Jewish environment? So if he's not going to, let's say a non-observant environment, I meant to say. So he's going to convert into an environment where he's not going to have a structure to be observing halacha. So is that still a chus? Or do we say, no, it's not in his interest. So when he's not Jewish, he's not obligated in all these mitzvahs. But to be Jewish and to not be able to fulfill mitzvahs, maybe that's not a chus. So this is a major practical issue with huge ramifications for children that are going to be brought to a non-observant context. And l'chachila, certainly it creates big problems. Even the question, but the evidence, okay, so let's say if that did happen, so is that a valid conversion or not? Yeah, this is a major machlokas aposkim. Soloveitchik thought that it's only considered as chus if there's going to be at least a basic religious education. Lusuriyesh and many others took that opinion. Rav Moshe has shuvas where he, I think somebody alluded to this a few weeks ago, I forgot who, but Rav Moshe has shuvas where he indicates that just to be a Jew, even if one is not observant of everything, is itself as chus, especially combined with the fact that if the environment doesn't allow for him to be observant, it's not his fault, so he's a shogeg, he's not going to be liable for whatever mitzvos he's not keeping. So there was a major machlokas about that. That is also a very, very significant practical issue. And what is a hugely significant issue was alluded to by somebody before. A real possible game changer that would very much change the whole context of the Gemara. So the Gemara is talking about Beis Din deciding to convert this child. But what if the child is being brought to Beis Din, is being brought to the mikveh by a parent? Now, which is probably the more likely scenario. Now, who exactly is going to be doing this? So there are a couple of situations. If you have a couple that is adopting a child, and the child was not born Jewish, and they want to bring him into their Jewish family and convert him for that purpose, so that's one kind of setting where you have to figure out who exactly has the authority to speak on behalf of the child. But what if it's, let's say, an intermarried Jewish man who is bringing his actual biological child to the mikveh? So then that might be a whole different story. And that may have practical implications for two major areas, which we'll have to pick up with next time. But first of all, are we subject to the same need for zochin in that case? Right? The Gemara says we need zochin when Beis Din is being matzil somebody. But maybe if a father is coming and doing it, as it sounds like from the Gemara, so then maybe then the father can define for the child what we assume to be his chus. And that's a very significant potential difference. And that may also then affect the question of the macha. Now, does he still have the ability to make a macha later? So these are hugely practical questions, because considering the fact that this is probably going to even be the more common scenario of Bate Din and not running around converting children out of nowhere. So presumably the more likely scenarios are either an adoption or a family converting together or a Jewish father and the mother converting or not. So these are the kind of scenarios that are most likely if a katan is involved. So if those halachas are different, let's say if the father is the one who is making this happen, if those two halachas are affected by this, those are very significant questions. If there is a different standard for what's called a schus, and if there may not be the possibility of macha, those are very important questions to try to consider. So you'll have the opportunity to hear practicalities and questions tomorrow. And we'll continue this discussion, God willing, otherwise on Wednesday. So just to quickly recap, we talked about the Gemara, about Ger Katan and Ksubas and Daf Yud Aleph, which told us a few important points, that Beis Din is able to do this because of Zochin, and because he's a child who hasn't tasted the undisciplined life yet, we can assume it's still his chus, and when he grows up, he can change his mind. Tosus and the other Rishonim bring up the question of whether Zochin here can be effective on a level of Min HaTorah, and is this a Ger only with Rabbanan, or maybe a Ger Min HaTorah? And Rabbi Werman and others brought this together with the question of what is Beis Din doing? Is Beis Din effecting the Geris, or is Beis Din just watching the Geris that the Ger himself does? We got into the question of, did we make a bracha? Do we worry about what the future may bring? Etc., etc. Again, it's a question of what happens to Kabbalah Samitzvahs, the Shita Mekubetzis, assuming that Kabbalah Samitzvahs is impossible, so then it's not crucial, and the Dagom Ravav is a spin on that, and we're willing to hold discussion about how this does and does not parallel the role of Karban, and then that all assumes that what happens when he becomes a Bar Mitzvah is a delayed Kabbalah Samitzvahs, and we have to discuss why does that not require Bezdin. Or does it get buzzed in an indirect way? And we mentioned the Chakira, this radiation. I was discussed that maybe it's about that, or maybe it's about just defining retroactively what is and what isn't as chus. We talked about whether the Rambam does have this idea of being able to be mocha later. We talked about whether you can convert a child, without his das, but what if it's against his das, if he's old enough to express he doesn't want to do this? And then we brought up the question, is there an objective definition of schus separate from what the individual might want? What if it's going to be a non-observant context? Is that still considered a schus to convert into that? Many postmen thought not, or Moshe thought maybe yes. And then we talked about, is the language of the Gemara starts off talking about a bezdin. What if you have a parent bringing this child to convert? You can discuss whether it means a halachic parent or whether it means just the person who is functioning as a parent or the person who maybe doesn't even have the status of a parent but has control over the decisions of the child. All of these things might be relevant and might be possibilities. And in that situation, it could be that that may redefine the terms here. And that might be relevant to two very important questions. Do we still have to figure out if it's a chus? And also, is there still a possibility of him being mocha when he grows up? So all of those important questions, God willing, we will say a little bit more about that. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and we welcome Rabbi Reis to be with us. And I wish you all a productive and effective and happy and safe and healthy day.
May you have it.
All right, so we'll see you soon. Yes, Moshe Dechter.
Just for regarding Rabbi Reis.
Yes.
Would Rabbi Reis be able to provide like maybe the policies of the Geirus where he officiates for the controversies? Is it worth bringing up those like really complex?
Yeah, that's I think that's what he's going to discuss with us.
Okay.
Definitely. Ask him whatever is on your mind.
Okay.
Yes, that's a lot of what he'll hopefully provide for us. Shlomo, you have a question?
Okay, just a quick scheduling question.
Yeah.
What time do you think he's going to finish tomorrow at?
I think I told him that we usually go 45 minutes to an hour. So I assume it's the same kind of...
Probably by 12:45, you think he'll be done?
Should be, yeah.
Okay, just wanted to make sure there's something there. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a great day. Call those.